weather and climate often cause concern and curiosity, but understanding the facts behind the phenomena can be a challenge. We're here to help. From the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign, and Illinois Public Media, welcome to Weather Realness, a weekly podcast about the skies above Illinois and the world. I'm your host, Maddie Stover, a doctoral student in physics here at the U of I.
And I'm Steve Nesbitt, professor of climate, meteorology, and atmospheric sciences at the University of Illinois.
And today we're talking all about humidity and agriculture. Steve, can you tell us a bit more about what your department does?
So we teach undergraduate and graduate programs, even online programs, to students who are interested in studying everything from your average temperature across the globe, how it's changing with climate change, all the way to extreme weather events and impacts on aspects of society and the people.
What do you think about as a meteorologist when the summer's humidity arrives in central Illinois?
Well, that's a great question. It's very mixed feelings. I'm a fan of storms, and with humidity, of course, it's the fuel for storms and precipitation. That's the exciting part for me. I know not everybody shares that opinion about the storms and humidity, but of course it brings our rainfall. And so we have to put up with the sensation of humidity as a person and those bad feelings when we go outside, but also it brings rainfall so we can have water. Maddie, your PhD is in physics. How come you became interested in the weather and climate?
There's so much physics that goes into weather and climate, kind of these relationships between pressure, temperature, all are kind of based in, the first principles are based in these physics models. So my dissertation specifically is kind of interested in the atmospheric physics that drives fire weather conditions. I've taken a couple courses in the department to get a little bit better of a background in climate and weather, so that's kind of how I found my way to this field. And making his co-host debut is meteorologist for Nutrien Agriculture Solutions and friend of WIL, Andrew Pritchard. Welcome, Andrew.
Thanks so much for having me.
So, Andrew, can you tell us a bit about your background in weather and your work with Nutrien?
Definitely. So I grew up here in the Midwest, right here in central Illinois. And like Steve just said, I grew up fascinated with the thunderstorms that we get every spring and summertime. So I'm lucky enough now to have made a career where I grew up working with the very thing that I loved, and that's the weather. So working for Nutrien Ag Solutions, I'm an agricultural meteorologist, so I spent a lot of time supporting the folks in the field, helping, you know, farmers and the people who are assisting them, our crop consultants and agronomists, stay ahead of the weather, understand how it's going to be impacting their logistics and their growing season. But there's also a safety component to that as well. We've got a lot of people out in the field who are vulnerable to those thunderstorms and other disruptive weather events. So making sure that they know what's coming ahead of time and then helping them put things back together on the back end of those.
Any of those songs sound familiar to you guys?
The last one did.
That's right. We're talking about corn sweat and how it can make the summer heat more uncomfortable and sometimes dangerous here in the Midwest. And we want to hear from you. If you have a weather or climate question you want answered, please leave a voicemail at 217-333-2141 or email weatherrealness@illinois.edu. So, Andrew, when we open our weather app, we'll see a number called relative humidity. What is that?
Yeah, so the relative humidity is expressed as a percentage showing how saturated the air is at a given temperature. And you'll often see that accompanied by the dew point temperature there, which is the temperature that you would cool the air to reach 100% saturation. 100% saturation, of course, would be a foggy day for us here out in the Midwest.
Yeah, so dew point is kind of a measure of the absolute water content in the air, while relative humidity is more so of how humid it feels.
Definitely, yeah. It's a kind of confusing concept to grapple, but you're on the right track there.
And so, Steve, why is it more humid in the summer, and why does humidity make us feel hotter?
Air actually holds water vapor proportional to its temperature. So as the temperature increases at the molecular level, you get a reaction that allows more water vapor to go from, let's say, the liquid phase and, let's say, within a lake or in the land surface, and that water can evaporate more readily, and so the humidity goes up. And why humidity makes us feel hotter? Well, actually, nature's air conditioner is evaporation. So as water vapor can evaporate as it's warmer, gets into the air, and then actually less can then evaporate off of our skin, and that makes us feel hotter.
Yeah, absolutely. Sweating is our most important kind of cooling mechanism. Instead of that heat from the sun warming up our bodies, our core temperature, it actually, that energy is transferred to the water in our skin, which goes into water vapor. So we don't get that core temp warming. Sweat is super important to how we cool. And if there's a bunch of moisture already in the air, it's more difficult for that water to evaporate.
Feeling hot.
I think today we're going to talk about how plants help us feel cooler.
Yeah, absolutely. To learn more about corn sweat, we're joined by Carl Bernacki, professor in crop sciences in the Department of Agriculture, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences at the University of Illinois. Carl is an expert on impacts of atmospheric and climatic change on crop species important to the Midwest. Carl, thank you for joining us.
It's my pleasure.
So, Carl, what is corn sweat?
Well, in my discipline, we refer to corn sweat as evapotranspiration. It really represents the combination of two different processes. One of them is evaporation, which is generally going to be water that, let's say, in the morning when leaves are covered with dew, that water is going to evaporate off, or the soil holds water at its surface, that water is going to evaporate off. But then there's this other process called transpiration. That's the process by which the roots will take up the water from the soil, move it through the plants, and there are little openings on the leaves that allow that water to move through. That's the transpiration component. In most conditions in the summer, that's going to be the dominant process of the evapotranspiration that leads to most of the humidity coming into the atmosphere.
Why does corn sweat?
Well, first of all plants will do this. And so soybean will actually transpire as much as corn. So they have relatively similar values, but I think corn sweat sounds a lot better than soybean sweat. But they do it as a natural consequence of the need to take up carbon dioxide from the atmosphere. So these little openings in the leaves are built specifically to let carbon dioxide in so plants can photosynthesize, they can grow, and they can produce the food that we eat. But as a consequence of that carbon dioxide going in, water vapor is going to escape. And so there's this constant trade-off that plants have in how much carbon do we let in versus how much water are we willing to lose. And so that's why they exist, and plants actually have a lot of control over that ratio of how much carbon goes in versus water coming out.
How much water are we talking here?
Well, it depends on the day. And so a lot of it's going to be a function of exactly what we were talking about earlier, how much humidity is in the air, what is the temperature of the air. But just using some of the sensors and the equipment that we install in agricultural fields, in a typical summer day, we're looking at anywhere from about 3 to 4 millimeters of water transpired. And that doesn't mean a whole lot to a lot of people, but that corresponds somewhere in the order of about 3,500 gallons per acre, or roughly 1 gallon per day per about 10 plants.
So, Carl, how is corn sweat changing in the warming climate?
It's actually changing a number of different ways. As the climate's warming, one of the consequences of a warmer climate is the atmosphere can hold even more moisture. And it's not just a linear thing. It's not additive. It's an exponential increase in how much water the atmosphere can hold. And so as it's warming up, the atmosphere is trying to pull more water out of the plants. And so that's increasing the transpiration rate. But a second component of this is just that over the last, 40, 50 years, crops have been planted in much higher densities, and so we're looking at a lot more plants per field. And there's this trade-off where higher productivity, basically you want more carbon dioxide going into the plants, an absolute consequence of that is going to be a lot more water coming out. And so the atmosphere is able to hold more water, the temperatures are rising, and there are a lot more plants per area of ground that are releasing this moisture into the air.
So it's a more intense exchange of carbon dioxide and water between the plants and the atmosphere.
Absolutely.
For those just tuning in, you're listening to Weather Realness, the show all about weather and climate. Today, we're talking about corn sweat. We are joined in the studio by Carl Bernacki, professor in crop sciences, Andrew Pritchard, meteorologist for Nutrien Agriculture Solutions, and Stephen Nesbitt, professor in the Department of Climate, Meteorology, and Atmospheric Sciences.
Carl, is there any limit to how much water the crops can pump up? And what happens if there's a drought?
So there is a limit, and that limit is fundamentally the amount of water in the soil that's available for the roots. And so the beginning of most growing seasons here in central Illinois and throughout much of the Midwest, we have these amazing soils that do a great job of holding on to moisture that's readily released to the plants. That generally could buy the plants quite a bit of buffer. As long as the roots are able to grow down into that reservoir of water, they're going to continue to evapotranspire. But if they start to deplete that water because of really high temperatures and a really high demand in the atmosphere for that water, so the atmosphere is sucking it all out of the plants, then you start to run into trouble. Plants have some mechanisms that they can adjust how their leaves are oriented in order to try to minimize the damaging effects of that loss of water. But for the most part, they're limited by what the roots have access to. Now, once they run out of water, then, you know, this evapotranspiration, which has a net cooling effect, just like sweat does on humans, that evapotranspiration starts to diminish. As that diminishes, then the plants are going to take all this heat from the atmosphere and all this sunlight that they're really good at absorbing, and that heat isn't going to go into evaporating water. It's going to actually just warm up the surface, and that's going to create much hotter conditions.
Do plants need to kind of adapt to warming temperatures to be able to cool themselves efficiently enough in a warmer climate?
Absolutely, they need to adapt, and it's a big challenge because a lot of processes involved in how plants grow, such as photosynthesis, is very temperature sensitive. And a lot of the crops that we rely on don't do particularly well at really high temperatures. And so if these plants aren't able to adjust to these really high temperatures, then there's a chance of reduced yields, potentially losses in yields. And so it's a very big aspect of research that's going on in agriculture is to try to figure out how to overcome some of these challenges.
Is there a genetic modification solution? Can you kind of change the genes of the crop to be able to sustain that heat stress?
There are a lot of different strategies that are being employed. I think there's a lot of variation already, genetic variation in crops that can be exploited in order to figure out what might grow better in different environments. And so it might be taking some of the corn varieties that are grown in the southern states and moving them northward. But there's also a lot of work that's going on trying to genetically modify the crops so that they're more resilient to temperature. So think about in nature, there exist plants, for example, in Death Valley in California that do quite well under really hot, really dry conditions. They have enzymes that are able to withstand these really high temperatures. And so the big question is, can we take these really thermal, stable enzymes and move them into the crops that we rely on for our food or for our fuel or for our fiber, whatever it may be?
Another really interesting part of your research is the potential of Midwest agriculture to actually pull carbon out of the atmosphere. What are your latest findings on this?
Yeah, so my research group, in collaboration with a lot of other groups around the state and around the Midwest, we have a very focused measurement campaign where we're trying to understand how different crop species can take carbon out of the atmosphere and store it in the soil. This is good because it can help reduce the amount of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. But another aspect of a lot of carbon in soils is resilience. High carbon soils tend to grow better plants. They tend to be more resilient. They hold water much better, which buffers against the potential for droughts or other types of really detrimental scenarios that can really have a negative impact on ecosystems.
So, Carl, it's my understanding that the first residents of Illinois may have experienced a different climate than we do now because of the change in land cover. Can you describe how it was like for the first residents here in Champaign-Urbana in central Illinois and how that changed over time?
Well, yeah, the original settlers of Illinois were confronted with a largely wetland or grassland-covered landscape with the occasional forests that were running alongside rivers and streams. It was a very different system, a very different ecosystem. One of the things that had to happen in order for agriculture to take hold here in the state is the draining of most of the wetlands across the state. And so that's one of the reasons we have such great soils is because of the fact that this water was these soils were inundated for several thousands and tens of thousands of years before settlers came in and started to disrupt the landscape.
And so are we less humid now than we were when we were more of a marsh ecosystem?
That's a good question. I think plants are really efficient at moving moisture from the soil into the atmosphere. And so odds are plants back then probably had relatively similar, if not maybe lower, evapotranspiration rates than what we see in the crops nowadays. So, and I'm basing this hypothesis on the fact that if I were to go out and make measurements on, let's say, a native prairie species, so I could clamp onto a leaf and I could measure how much carbon's going into that leaf and I can measure how much water's coming out of that leaf. Those rates are going to be much lower than the crops that we're planting in Illinois. the crops we're growing in Illinois have been bred over, in some cases with maize, 10,000 years to become really productive. They have higher photosynthetic rates, and that requires that they have much higher need for water. And so I would argue that it probably we're looking at one of the most water-intense ecosystems on the planet. And I'm basing that on the fact that several researchers have shown from satellite imagery that the Midwestern landscape is the most productive ecosystem on the planet when it is physiologically active. And so for these 3 months of the summer, photosynthetic rates, they dwarf what you see from even the tropical rainforests.
So a feeling those people still would need air conditioning, even though it might have been a little bit less humid.
I imagine that would be the case, yes.
So, Carl, what are some common misconceptions that you come across in the general public about corn sweat?
Well, I think one of the biggest ones is that it's actually the same thing as sweat. And so sweat that we do is specifically geared toward cooling our bodies down. And certainly the evapotranspiration that that comes from plants, you know, it has a net cooling effect. And without that evapotranspiration, odds are plants would overheat and die. But they're completely different processes. And so that corn sweat is a natural process that's required of the plants. And it occurs whether it's hot or cold, humid or dry. It's constantly happening. And so earlier I made the comment that on a typical summer day, you're looking at about 3,000, 3,500 gallons per hectare, right, or 1 gallon per 10 plants. With this recent heat wave, measurements that we're collecting from the field show that the plants are actually releasing about 6,000, 6,500 gallons per acre, or, you know, 1 gallon per 5 plants. And so so this is happening all the time, and it's a necessary requirement for plants to grow. And if humidity gets too high, the stomata, the little openings on the leaves are still open. There may not be as much water moving through, and that's where you get really high humidity conditions within the plant canopy, which can really, you know, result in disease or fungal infections types of things. And so this is a natural phenomenon. We sweat when we need to. Plants are doing this evapotranspiration all the time.
Carl, you mentioned that intensive agriculture has helped change the regional climate here in the Midwest. How has this impacted the whole overall impacts of climate change on the area?
Well, that's an excellent question. And there were some really nice studies that were done a few years ago through models and measurements. And one of the things that they've shown is while the planet has been warming quite rapidly, the major agricultural regions of the planet, particularly the Midwestern United States, has not been seeing the same level of warming during the summer that the rest of the planet has been seeing. And they've attributed this warming hole, so an area that isn't warming to, you know, the same extent as everywhere else, on the fact that the intensification of agriculture is resulting in much more evapotranspiration or corn sweat. And that's having a net cooling effect on the region, which is a pretty remarkable scale of measurements. And it's really pretty amazing.
Interesting. So how does corn sweat cool the region?
Very much in the same way that sweat coming from the pores on your body are going to cool your body. And so that energy is coming from, you know, from the air, from the atmosphere. But there's also, like I said, plants are really good at absorbing sunlight, which is really high in energy. And so it takes all that energy, and that energy has to go somewhere. Photosynthesis is really the primary function that we rely on plants for, right? Without photosynthesis, they're not going to grow. But that only accounts for about 1% of the energy that's hitting the ecosystem. So 99% of that energy needs to go somewhere else. A huge part of that is energy going into evaporating water, that corn sweat. And so without that water being released from the canopy, the canopies would overheat. Our landscape would be a very different environment. And the only plants we'd probably be able to grow are the same plants that are growing in Death Valley.
While it's annoying and kind of uncomfortable to be muggy, this corn sweat is protecting us from these extreme kind of daytime highs that other areas are seeing.
It is, but it's also creating heat indexes or feels like temperatures that can match what we might see in Arizona, depending on the environment or the conditions.
So, Andrew, what are some of the impacts of rising humidity you've seen on agriculture working at Nutrien?
Something we're dealing with a lot this year. It's been a very humid summer. It's been a very stormy summer across the Corn Belt. And, of course, that's great news to get those timely rains. It's producing a healthy crop in a lot of areas, but it also brings in the potential for disease to creep into these crops here. We get high humidity levels. It's easy for those, you know, disease and different funguses to grow there. But it's also it's a challenge for getting out and doing field work. So this goes all the way back to the spring and the early part of the summer when we were trying to plant. It was really hard for some folks to get the heavy machinery out into the fields. We had some folks in the Ohio Valley where they had near record rainfall early in the growing season that either had to replant their crops or had what we call a prevent plant, where they weren't even able to get the crops into the ground. So it's kind of it's good to have the high humidity and get the moisture here, but there are challenges too when we get too much of that moisture in a small area.
And so then, Steve, I want to ask, do we see warmer temperatures overnight with more humid weather?
Yeah, so it turns out that the most prevalent greenhouse gas, talking about a gas that traps energy here on the planet Earth rather than radiating it out to space, is water vapor. So water vapor traps long wave energy near the surface, so it can't escape out to space. And so near the surface, with more humidity, we'll see increased temperatures, especially overnight when we expect that radiation to cool the surface. So it's a really important control on temperatures globally, but also locally when you have high humidity. Generally, the low temperatures at night will be higher.
Oh, I see, because that water vapor is just trapping it in the atmosphere overnight. And so, Andrew, what is sort of the impact on crops for this overnight humidity?
Yeah, the overnight humidity is not allowing those temperatures to drop quite so much. And so in some of these instances where we have a prolonged period where, you know, say instead of the temperatures overnight dropping into the 60s, you know, we're seeing those overnight low temperatures maybe held up in the mid 70s. And we've done a little bit of research here, and it looks like kind of that 74, 75 degree threshold there, if we're not able to get the temperatures to drop below that for an extended period during the overnights, we start to accumulate some stress on those crops as they're just spending more energy trying to cool themselves than they are, you know, doing grain fill or you know, protecting themselves. So it's just those warmer overnights, they're stressful, you know, for us humans, we're not able to cool down, but it's also stressful for the plants too if they don't have that opportunity to cool down.
And so, Steve, what do climate projections look like for humidity going forward in the Midwest? Do we expect to see more humid summers?
Well, that's a really interesting question. I think the question of humidity is a complicated one that depends on how both the land surface responds to climate change, but then also how the large-scale drivers of the climate change regional climate. So here in the Midwest, we're going to see balance between more downpours, which will, of course, increase the soil moisture and increase the amount of evapotranspiration and corn sweats that we get. And there's sort of a positive feedback cycle that can happen there with more rainfall, more humidity, more miserable summers. But then also globally, what we're seeing is a trend of drying of continents, too. And that may make us go into a feedback of drier weather, which might cause a lot of stress on plants. And so we might see, in fact, a situation where we have more extreme precipitation and humidity, but then also more droughts and drier and hotter climates.
Yeah, because like Carl was speaking to before, the plants have to adapt not only to extreme humidity, but also to drought. Is that some research that you're involved with as well?
Yeah, we have quite a bit of research trying to figure out how to make the plants much more resilient to a whole range of different environmental conditions. And a lot of the challenges that these plants are facing, you know, they'll have similar improvements, let's say, under high temperature, can also yield better results in drought conditions. And so there's a way to try to address multiple different stressors simultaneously.
Thank you so much, Carl.
It was my pleasure.
Carl Bernacki is a professor in crop sciences at the University of Illinois and an expert and impacts of atmospheric and climatic change on crop species important to the Midwest. You're listening to Weather Realness, the podcast about weather and climate. I'm Maddie Stover, along with Steve Nesbitt and Andrew Pritchard. Thank you for chatting, Steve and Andrew.
You're welcome.
Happy to do it.
Coming up next, we'll be talking about the impacts of climate change on agriculture, why it's a particular threat to farmers in the Midwest, and if we can expect higher prices at the grocery store. If you have a weather or climate question you want us to tackle, leave us a voicemail at 217-333-2141 or email weatherrealness@illinois.edu.